podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Buzz. I'm Trev Downey. I'm joined by Dave Hendrick for our latest episode, which is about our favourite top 10 television cops. Now, before I introduce Dave or allow him to introduce himself and his thoughts on this show, can I put out a plea to everyone who listens to this to please not come crying at us that we left out X, Y, or Z off the list? These are lists that we make up 2 or 3 days before the show, or perhaps like me today on the day of the show, where you access quite literally your own memory banks and you try to think of, and I quote, your favorite television cops. This does not mean objectively the best. We said this before. Our favorites. And they're the ones that come to mind. And on the back of our last top 10 list, we had several humiliating moments where we went, oh God, how did we leave that out? I had one at the end of the show. We had several afterwards where people said this, that, and the other. All good stuff, all good nature, don't get me wrong. But you understand the nature of the show, folks, is that we are just sort of improvising off our knowledge of whatever's in rattling around in the craniums at the moment. I think that's a fair enough setup, Dave.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. It is literally just our favorites. So it's not the definitive best. We're not calling it that. We're not power ranking anything. It's just our 10 favorite TV cops or duos of cops, because we did agree that you could include a duo as one entry on your list.
Yes.
I should point out at this point, I did mention to Eddie Gibbs that we were doing this, and he said that Kojak and Columbo were the answers for him. Eddie, a classical man.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, he went with the two classic options. Now, we've done top 10s, and because it's us, and because, you know, narrowing things down to 10 is actually harder than you think. We do have some honorable mentions. So I actually have 8 honorable mentions. I had 7, but I've made a late addition.
Well, I'd love to tell you that I stuck to your earlier guidelines of 8. But what I ended up with this was this huge long list. And then as I tried to remove things to make a top 10,
you thought of more people.
I kept thinking of more people.
Yeah.
So allow me, in a way that is completely nothing but a list. I don't need any responses if you don't want to. I might add a sentence or two as we go. But let me just throw out these list of television detectives that over the years I have found that I really liked for various reasons. And then we'll take your list, which is altogether more curated and thought through. Mine was stuff that arrived in my brain and I went, oh, so it's part of my long list. I'm going to go through it really quick. And it will leave out things like that are people's favorites, like that I haven't seen. For example, there's a couple of more recent Brit ones that I haven't seen. Like, oh, Line of Duty, for example. I have never seen that, so I can't include that in mine. There was a couple of other ones I was chatting to Mrs. about, and she was saying, well, you've got to include that. And I said, well, I can't because I haven't seen it, so it's not one of my favorites. So of the ones that I've seen over the years, here are the ones that came in with a shout of being in and around the top 10 but didn't make it. Taggart. Cracker with Robbie Coltrane, Morse with John Thaw, Bergerac, which I loved if only for the car, with John Nettles, The Bill, which was on every evening when I came in from school, and I remember all the different characters. I like Tosh Lines, I like lots of different lads in that, but The Bill was a kind of formative Brit TV cop show. My preference as a little lad was The Rockford Files and Jim Rockford. And I don't know why that is, apart from the fact that James Garner is obviously a very kind of charismatic dude and I really liked him in the show. I had a little pair of trousers and a jacket when I was like a tiny lad in the 70s, in the late 70s, which were my Rockford Files jacket and trousers. Who knows why things like that happen? But that's what was in my head. TJ Hooker makes it onto my list with The Bell, Bill Shatner, not because it was good, just because I remember it and I remember it fondly. And it was Captain Kirk, who, as you remember from the past show about top 10s, was, of course, the key guy in Star Trek, which is a formative and one of my top three or four of all time TV shows, that original season. Columbo is there, so Eddie will be happy. Jane Tennison from Prime Suspect, Helen Mirren, is there. Kojak is there, not so much because I watch it all the time, but because it was a cultural thing when I was growing up that you could not avoid. Kojak was this cultural force. Everybody knew about it. And I did see several episodes. A guy who was unlucky not to make it onto the list is David Caruso, because both Horatio Caine and John Kelly from NYPD Blue are figures that I think of fondly. But Caruso, I don't know, just something about, I think his portrayal of Kelly is great. Horatio is obviously very stylized and maybe not the best acting, but honorable mention. Cagney and Lacey, another one from my childhood that was on RTE TV all the time. So we saw it all the time. It was on the evenings. I remember that fondly too. Stabler and Benson from SVU, good pairing. Starsky and Hutch from my childhood again. Now, I know it's a 70s thing, but it was repeated through the 80s on RTE because Ireland. And the one that made it, the last two that didn't quite make it into my top 10, and they were close, was the character Cassie Stewart, played by Nicola Walker in a show called Unforgiven, which took me completely by surprise. I did not see it coming. I was scouring through Netflix one day. I'll give this a go. Loved it. Loved her. I think she's brilliant as an actress. And I'm going to mention the last one. And he is absolutely gutted to not make it as Chief Wiggum from The Simpsons. What a lad. What a lad. My memories of having incredible laughs quoting Chief Wiggum lines with my kid growing up was second to none. I can't think of a better Simpsons character. So that's my list, my friend. I know it's a long one, but it'll have gotten people into the feel of the show, I think. Any crossover there?
Do you have your phone handy?
I do.
Just check your WhatsApp. I've sent you a picture of my honorable mention list just to prove there's no spoofing involved here. And I'd like you to read the top name.
Chief Wiggum.
I thought I was going to get a laugh with that one. So there we go. I have Chief Wiggum because you have to. The Simpsons is a cultural phenomenon. I have Stella Gibson from The Fall, played by Gillian Anderson. I, like you, have Jane Tennison, played by Helen Mirren in Prime Suspect. I have Cagney and Lacey. Now, the main reason they're on, that's a nostalgic thing, because my mom watched that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And would have watched the reruns on RTE. So years later, I found it and I watched it and I enjoyed it. And it was more for the nostalgic thing. I have Sonny and Rico. Sonny Crockett and Rico Tubbs from Miami Vice, played by Don Johnson and Philip Michael Thomas, respectively. I, like you, have Dr. Edward Fitzgerald, played by Robbie Coltrane in Cracker, which is an incredible series. I have Kate Fleming in Line of Duty, played by Vicky McClure, because, you know, Vicky McClure. And then the last one I have is Kieran O'Reilly playing Detective Garda Kieran Madden in Love Hate. And I like the character, but the reason I've put him in, now this might get me in trouble. There is one line that he utters in the show, in his very first scene, where he is playing, he's undercover playing a drug addict called Hego, and he's attempting to buy drugs. And the line is a little bit controversial, but it's worth pointing out that as he was doing this portrayal, he was an active member of An Garda Síochána Conn, the Irish police force.
No way.
Yeah, and there was a whole kerfuffle over it where the police commissioner at the time, Martin Callanan, demanded an investigation into O'Reilly being in this show because he was still an active guard. And he's, by all accounts, was a very good guard. And there was a whole big thing, but it turned out he hadn't actually infringed any regulations and had actually done his homework to make sure it was okay to be in this show. But the line he utters, and the only reason it sticks in my head is because it kind of sums up the uneducated racist scumbag view of the world that there is in certain parts of the world where everybody who looks a certain way is the same. And what he offers is, go back to Japan, you Chinese cunt. Which is magnificent stuff. And we've all come across people who are that stupid in our day-to-day lives. So yeah, that's the main reason he's in, because that line has always stuck in my head. But he is actually very good in the show. And Love Hate is a triumph, written by a gentleman from our hometown, Stuart Carolyn, who went to the same primary school as me and the same secondary school as the pair of us, and who grew up in a house that was built by my grandfather and lived in by my mother when she was a toddler. So I've always had a bit of an affinity for that house. And therefore, I knew Stuart in primary school. He's only a few years ahead of me. So I've always kind of watched out for his work, and he is excellent at what he does.
That's a lovely tie-in. Stuart, obviously, also famous for the character of Navin Man back in the day, unless I'm very much mistaken, which is a cultural phenomenon. Before either of us ever thought about throwing our voices out onto the airwaves. That's a really interesting list. Tragically, a couple of them are going to be on my top 10. But it just shows you, doesn't it, that there is going to be some crossover. I'm completely at a loss as to how to do this, whether we should go one for one. I think it's probably the easiest.
Yeah, let's just go one for one, 10 to 1.
God, you've ordered them, have you?
Oh, I have. You don't have to order them. I'll give you my ones in order, and you can just throw out whoever.
I'll do a rough approximation of order. Yeah, I'll try and do a rough.
Yeah, who was your last one to kind of scrape on and kind of work from there?
On your it was a name from your honourable list, and it was the lovely Gillian Anderson as Stella Gibson. And the reason why is Gillian Anderson. And I could intellectualize, I could try to justify, I could talk about what a good solid series that is, and it is.
You'd be telling lies to the listeners.
But I'd be lying to you, I value you too much, dear listener, to lie to your face, because bottom line is, if it's Gillian Anderson or if it's Kate Beckinsale, I'm all in.
You have to admire it, you have to admire it. So I told you, Trev, there was going to be one that there was no way you were having this person on your list. You just weren't going to have this person. And I would be genuinely floored if you have this person on your list.
And is there a particular reason? Can you give me a hint why I wouldn't, or ballpark, so I can see if I can guess who this is?
Well, I decided, having had Detective Garda Kieran Madden on my honorable mention, I decided I wanted to have a Paddy on my main list. So I wanted to have someone who represents the best of Ireland. Now, again, I'm taking liberties here. But the main reason I've put him on is because we as people will know, have just finished doing a episode-by-episode companion show of True Detective Season 4, Night Country. And one of the characters in that show is played by Dervla Kerwin. So when Dervla popped up, Dervla became famous for Goodnight Sweetheart and then Bally Kiss Angel. So after much hunting, I managed to track down the box set for Bally Kiss Angel, and myself and my missus are now watching it and having a great time watching it. The nostalgia is overflowing. We're already on season 4. It's a tremendous set of lads on the whole. And my number 10 is Garda Ambrose Egan, played by Peter Hanley, who was the Prince of Wales in Braveheart, which a lot of people will know him from. But Ambrose Egan, a tremendous fella.
That's a great shout. And that character in Braveheart, that's the quite effeminate prince that the king is embarrassed by. Isn't that right? Is that the guy?
I do actually remember
the character as well. Now, it's interesting. A friend of mine was getting into the film stuff around the same time as me, but in the crew end of things, and was first AD on Ballygus Angel. And I don't know whether it was, like you said earlier on, it was too close to the case everyone was always talking about, but I did see several episodes, and wasn't it Neil Tobin was in that, a famous Irish comedian, and a few people indeed. Like that. It
Stephen was, Tompkinson.
Yeah, it was very watchable. And actually, we were speaking before the mics went live about a Irish movie called Intermission. Mm. And there's a lady there in the scene, the famous scene from Intermission, where they go to, shall we say, the older people's nightclub. And she takes a shine to Cillian Murphy. She's got a wonderful resonance, a sonorous voice, this lady. And I guarantee you, she was in Ballygus Angel as well, because I remember the voice from that as much as anything else. She's a much older lady by the time 2008 and that movie comes around. But this was sort of late 90s, wasn't it, Ballygus Angel?
So yeah, Ballygus Angel would have come out in 1996. And yeah, then it ran six seasons through to 2001.
I feel like she was one of the barflies in the local bar, that, you know, the way there's loads of characters that were in there all the time because Ireland. So, yeah, lovely. So, and what was it about that character particularly? Was he kind of a bumbling, likable oaf kind of character? That's how I recall.
A bit of a bumbling oaf wouldn't be accurate. More, very much afraid of things. Afraid of his wife. Afraid of his mother. Afraid of his boss. But gets on with it, and he's a genuinely good person who wants to go out of his way to help everybody. And in the episodes that we're watching right now in season four, he is being confronted by a drug dealer from the local big town who he had previously gone undercover to catch. And the guy is now out on remand. And the guy confronts him and he starts pushing him. And Egan takes off his hat and says, "I'll fight you." And throws, now Trev, when I say this is the worst punch anyone's ever thrown in their life, it's like if you threw this punch, you'd break every bone in your arm, let alone your hand. But it's brilliant. Like, it's him standing up for himself and standing his ground. And it's like, it's a good moment in the show. But he's a really good character who's never really the main focal point. He's always like a secondary character, but he's just someone you get to like. And there's a couple of brilliant scenes with him and his wife. His wife is the daughter of the kind of local power broker who's like a landowner and a builder and all. You know, he's got his hands in all the different pies. We have them in every town in the country. And his father-in-law buys the local pub after the original landlady, who was played by Dervla Kerwin, dies. And Ambrose and the wife and the child are to move in above the pub, because it just makes more sense, rather than the traditional Irish thing was the town guard would live in the Garda station, and it would be both Garda station and home, and it's not really suitable if you've got kids. But he was afraid that was against some sort of rules. So the wife, Niamh, starts moving the furniture across, and he comes home and finds the furniture's gone. And there's just this brilliant scene where he starts demanding to know where this lamp is, because his boss is coming to, you know, to check in and get, you know, have a look around and make sure everything is in order. He's like, "Where's the lamp? Where's the lamp? It's over in the pub." So it's just this brilliant scene of him running out of the pub with the lamp as his wife chases him. And this girl is trying to stop him to ask for help. And he's running across the road with his lamp. And it might not sound funny, but just in the context of the show, it's really good. So if anyone gets the chance, now I will say, finding that box set was not easy. And I definitely overpaid for it, but I'm delighted to have it, because it's just great nostalgia.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. That's exactly the type of thing that I think people will get a tremendous bit of value from a show like this, because it'll be, "Oh yeah, I think I remember that," or maybe never heard of it before, and will be rewarded with, I think this is a fair enough description, a lovely kind of warm, entirely threat-free,
innocent,
smiley, kind of a happy evening show. You could watch four or five of them back to back and be content with yourself. A really, a really lovely piece of Irish TV. As you said before, my number nine is Gil Grissom from CSI Vegas. And the reason for that is we watched this endlessly because it kind of coincided with when my kid was young. And so you watch a lot of telly when you've got young kids, especially when they got to bed, because like, what else are you going to be doing? You're one ear cocked and are they okay and whatever. So we watch a lot of this and we tend to binge watch stuff as well. Even back in the day when it wasn't particularly easy to do that unless you bought quite literally box sets of DVDs. And we had one such for CSI Vegas. And it's my favorite of all the CSI spinoffs for various reasons. I do like some of the characters in the other ones, but I just really did warm to the characters in the Vegas one particularly. And I always wondered if Gil Grissom was in some way supposed to be representative of the astronaut Gus Grissom, who was, you know, one of the premier astronauts and then had that really tragic ending in terms of the Cape Canaveral death that he had to endure. He was an interesting guy, a really, really advanced engineer and a controversial character because he was one of the guys who actually did some complaining about the equipment and the state of it ahead of that tragedy. So I'm not sure what that, it's a very specific name to choose, but what I liked about William Peterson in it was he was one of these kind of classic TV characters that, you know, is slow to warm to people, has obviously got vaguely kind of, let's just say, individual quirks. Not a lad would be very touchy-feely. He comes to develop a close bond with one of the other more socially awkward types as well. But everybody admires him. And he, when he gives you his admiration, that's a real source. That's a real attaboy for anyone to get as well. And we can all kind of relate to individual characters like that. I think Peterson does a great job with it. I think the first time I saw him was in a Michael Mann film. And he is very good. And at this stage, he's kind of early middle age. He's a lot kind of chunkier than he was when he was starring for Michael Mann and doing a job as a kind of a leading man. But I think he carries the show and he's got that kind of presence. And these are, again, they're procedurals, right? We all know what these are. We know what CSI is. And the thing about it is it gives you the little payoff at the end where you get the thing solved. And with Gil, it was usually quite clever. And he was, is it an entomologist, is the guys who are into insects, is that correct? So that was always part of his deal. Gil liked roller coasters for reasons as well. So just a quirky little character. I really liked them. I did enjoy the show. It's not a great show. It's not an all-time great cop show. He's not an all-time great character, but this is our favorites. So, you know, this is where I landed with my number nine.
My number nine is actually one of yours off your honorable mention list. It is Christopher Maloney and Mariska Hargitay as Stabler and Benson in Law and Order SVU. Obviously, Olivia Benson is still the lead in Law and Order SVU, and it's still a show I watch regularly. But the first 12 seasons with the two of them is absolutely tremendous. So, yeah, they're in at my number nine.
Yeah, I never got in on that show, but from by all accounts, it's one that really rewards, or it's one that really sort of inspires loyalty. People seem to get very into it. I know it's kind of the plot lines just by dint of the incredibly memorable sort of intro noises and the little bit that comes up as almost like a disclaimer, and there's a voiceover about these horrific crimes and these people, these are the stories of these people. It's obviously quite a bit of the edgier cop drama, I imagine.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's you know, it's a procedural, so it's, you know, it's the nuts and bolts, but it is a little bit it's a little bit tougher because obviously the storyline and the source material is tough to deal with.
Yeah, that bit darker. Right, okay, so we are on number eight, I think, for both of us at this stage. So Who will I go with? Yeah, this is the last one of my controversial shouts, and the last one that's in here because of any kind of sentimental or favorite reasons that are not like here. What I'm saying to you is the remaining seven are my top seven. I'm fairly sure. Yeah, they are. The remaining seven are my top seven. I will bow to nobody on that. But these first three were kind of sentimental choices. And I had to pick someone. So I ended up picking, the show was Criminal Minds, which was, again, in the same bracket as CSI Vegas, something that we just watched. It was just something we watched. And again, as the kid was getting older, occasionally we might watch it together, right? Even though, you know, occasionally dark themes and that too. But, you know, what are you going to do? So I had to pick someone from it. So I picked the character who I thought was probably the coolest character in it, was Derek Morgan, played by Shamar Moore. Again, I thought just he's an interesting character, right? He's got all that heroic thing going on. He's a ridiculously good-looking dude. You know, he does the cop stuff, the heroic action cop stuff really well. He's got this quirky relationship with one of the other members of the team, who's their kind of go-to computer expert. And, you know, there's something about the guy. He's just got this charisma thing going on. So rather than pick any of the others, who I think are all really interesting characters in that particular, I know there's spin-off Criminal Minds too, but in that particular show or season or whatever, multiple seasons with that particular crew, he was the one that kind of stood out. But there are a lot of good characters in there, really well drawn characters, and they teased them out well over the course of the show as well. So that really held my attention. Again, I would say that this is not one of the shows that I think is necessarily the best ever, but as procedurals go, it's pretty damn good. I did like it a lot. I'm having an absolute mare here because I've just realized in the middle of this, and I don't know if you have it, but I'm just going to say it out loud now in case this is one of those things where you're doing your list. This is why our show is the way it is. Do you have anyone from Hannibal in it?
No.
Yeah, that's because the cop really isn't the thing in Hannibal, I guess.
I think it can be.
Could really have had the cop from Hannibal. I do love Hannibal. Anyway, apologies. That just came into my head there when I was talking about procedurals. So that is my number eight. Where were you for eight?
So my number eight is being punished because there's only one season. It's Rust Cole from True Detective season one. And he would be higher, but there's only one season. So I've kind of punished him for that and dropped him down the order.
Oh, that's a big shout. No prizes for guessing that he features on my top 10 as well. But when you picked out Rust, I noticed we had the opportunity to include duos, and you appear to have decided not to go for any duos here in terms of bunging in Marty into the equation as well. Any particular reason for that?
I did consider it. I did. I was going to put both of them in, but I just, when it came down to it, it's more him that I'm drawn to. Like with Benson and Stabler, and with another duo that will be much higher on my list, it's both of them. It's the two of them together. Whereas I feel like I'd watch a show that's just Rust sitting in the room talking about anything.
Yeah,
and given his views on the world, it is his character more so than the other that I like it. Like, don't get me wrong, the other character is a really strong character as well, but it's his character that I wouldn't put them as equals in that regard.
I think that's absolutely fair. And as I initially put down Rust and Marty, and then I did take out Marty as well. Not that I don't think there's a really good job done with the Marty character, but it is, yeah, you're right. There's a sort of an extra level of fascination around the character of Russ Cole. But just to put into context what Marty brings to it, you know, you talked about you'd happily just watch Russ sitting in the corner talking to himself. But you know, one of those famous quotes where he says, he's got that, you know, wistful look on his face. He says, this place is like somebody's memory of a town, and the memory is fading. It's like there was never anything here but jungle. Marty just says, stop saying shit like that. It's unprofessional. I love that. I just got no time for us bollocks. And as a result, you know, I was very tempted to have them in as a duo, but I didn't. And so we now know that I have them in. We'll see where we place them later on. Anything else you want to say about El Rusty, or will I double down when I get my...
You fire ahead with your number seven.
Right. Seven for me is Crockett and Tubbs from Miami Vice. A tremendous duo. And the reason they're there for me is because that was the first show that I thought was incredibly cool on so many levels. I really liked the scripts and the plot lines. The central characters were outrageously charismatic guys. I was watching it on a slight delay, you know, so it wasn't just as it was coming out. It was probably a year or two afterwards. But even still, like, we're in Ireland, Dave, and the fashions seemed quite outrageous and something to aspire to as well. The cars were fucking so cool. The music, the theme was so cool. The setting is absolutely incredibly attractive as well. The whole thing ended up sort of leading into, and as a result of this, I don't mind saying to you, I give myself a little bit of credit for thinking, this is just put together beautifully. Whatever it is, the use of music, the use of filters over the camera, making things look a certain type of color. And I thought, this is just, it's beautifully stylized. It's almost like MTV brought to into some sort of cop show crossover. And it turns out it's Michael Mann, who is one of my favorite directors of all time. And you're just thinking, ah, and suddenly when you watch something later on, like Heat by Mann or something like that, and you go, yeah, a lot of the same things are still there. So I included the two lads because at the time, and I think to this day, it stands up as an all-time important cop show. Mm. And I noticed they made your honorable mentions. Did you, obviously you didn't watch this at the time, but
no.
Did you go back to it out of curiosity, or are you just aware of them as a cultural phenomenon that can't be?
No, went back to it because it was, again, like Cagney and Lacey, it was one of my mom's favorite shows when I was growing up. So, you know, I used to get sent off to bed as a, you know, 3 and 4 year old, and herself and my elfler or whoever be in the house would be watching. This was one of the shows that they'd watch. And so it was more that. It was more that kind of nostalgic purpose that I sought it out and watched it. And like you said, it's a very important show. And there's a lot of, you know, in everything, in every walk of life, whether it's film, TV, music, sport, whatever, it's all copycat. And there's a lot of things from Miami Vice that have been lifted and repurposed for many other shows, you know. So yeah, it had to make my honorable mention. The reason I didn't actually put it in my top 10 was because I was trying to keep it more to stuff that was during that I would have watched as it was on, rather than anything, which is why I don't have Kojak, for example, on my honorable mention list, because it wasn't a cultural phenomenon when I was growing up. That its time had kind of passed.
Yeah.
And then Columbo obviously had its little reboot thing in the late 80s. But again, it wasn't something that I watched. And I have gone back and watched both Kojak and Columbo and enjoyed them greatly. But again, I didn't have that connection to them that I had to some of the rest.
I've lost track in terms of numbers because my Word document that I've been cutting and pasting and taking things out of, I've made some terrible basic error and it's now a mess. So what number are we on?
Well, it's my number seven.
Your number seven. I've done my seven, have I?
You've done your seven. Your seven was...
Was the boys. Crockett
and Tubbs.
Lovely, yeah. Lovely, lovely.
So my number seven is Andy Sipowicz from NYPD Blue.
Yes.
Best described by Jason Gay of the Boston Phoenix as a drunken racist goon with a heart of gold, which is absolutely perfect. This is a brilliant character. And it's Dennis Franz is the actor in question here. And what I love about it is he starts off as just sort of one of the characters in the show. But as the show progressed, and for people that maybe aren't aware of NYPD Blue or how big it is, this in itself was a cultural phenomenon in the 90s. And through the middle of its run, Andy Sipowicz kind of steps to the forefront as the main guy. A couple of other main characters had left, and he was then the one that basically became the central figure, and the show was sort of loaded on to Dennis Franz's back to carry it. And carry it he did. It's an absolutely phenomenal portrayal, and it's a brilliant character.
I've got some things to say, and needless to say, now we've got people already know now at least two of my remaining ones. My number six is Bill Tench from Mindhunter, played by Holt McCallany. And what I love about Bill Tench is he's this sort of entirely relatable man's man type of character. And there's, I think, not enough of those sort of overtly masculine, but not in any way that could be deemed negative type characters. We need to see way more of those. I think the character of Bill Tench is brilliant in that regard. He has, you know, it's the show is obviously, if people aren't familiar with it, it's set in the late 60s. Is that right? Would that be fair to say?
Yeah.
And it's tracing, you know, the serial killers of the day with the emergent theories and technologies and approaches and methodologies that were being developed at the time around psychological profiling and stuff like that. And obviously the other central character is very, very important. But for me, Bill is the thing, is the emotional core of the show. There are the other two characters that are kind of the leads, if you like. You've got a professor who's drafted in, and you've got this young up-and-comer who is, let's say, slightly morally ambiguous. Bill is not morally ambiguous. Bill is, like I say, he's a straight shooter. He's an old-fashioned kind of a cop. He wants to do good. He wants to be a good man. He's got a very solid relationship with his wife, who's, it's only troubled by the fact that their son is very troubled. He doesn't know how to communicate that because he is a man of that era. He smokes relentlessly. He likes to drink. He likes to play golf. He likes to hang out with the lads. He tells a great story. He's a top man, Bill Tench. I think he's probably one of my favorite TV detectives of all time. Possibly I've placed him a bit low. So that's my number six.
Okay, my number six then is Lester Freeman, played by Clark Peters in The Wire. Just absolutely love Lester. I just think every scene he's in, he is absolutely dynamite. Whether it's the first few scenes where he's just sitting at his desk making dollhouse furniture and the others are sort of dismissing him as this, you know, weird fella. And then he really shows his chops here in terms of his ability to be, as they call it, real police.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get some of the backstory about, you know, why his career kind of got torpedoed. And as the show advances, he becomes absolutely central to it. And he is just brilliant. And Clark Peters is an actor that I'm hugely fond of. Again, would watch anything he's in. Loved him in Treme. He's in The Corner, which is phenomenal. And if he's in it, there's, you know, I'll, if he's in it for a run of episodes, I'll watch it.
Why is it that I've only seen him in stuff that seems to be David Simon? Because the guy should be everywhere. He's fantastic. Now, I think he's in, I saw, I did not like the movie The Five Bloods. And I said it and people were on my case. I just thought it was a mess of a film.
Mm.
I know it's Spike Lee. I know it's a wonderful cast. I just don't think it works at all. But he's good in it. But you're right. He is absolutely fantastic and very, very unlucky not to make my list. The only reason I did is I didn't want to oversubscribe from one show. You know what I mean? And I had this kind of anxiety about whether certain characters that are left in my top five were a duo or what I should do with it. So I was a little bit stressed, unless there is an unfortunate omission. I feel a bit weird about this now because we've got, what, our top five left each, right?
Yeah.
And you already know that Andy Sipowicz is in my top five, and you already know that Russ Cole is in my top five. And by dint of what I've just said, you already know there's at least one other Wire character in my top five. So I'm kind of tempted to just throw out now at this point our top fives,
yeah,
and then pick, you pick one of mine, I'll pick one of yours. We'll have a bit of a chat about it. How do you, yeah, what do you reckon?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So if you want to go first, give me your top five and then I'll give you mine.
So my top five are John Luther in the wonderful series of the same name. I absolutely love this character. Tremendous creation, invention, brilliantly brought to life by Idris Elba. Yes, it's quirky and British and perhaps not as big budget as some people would like. I just loved it. I really warmed to it. I thought it was really, really good television. And it hinges on Elba being fantastic, and he crosses over into The Wire as well, of course. Vic Mackey is the next member of my top five from The Shield, played by Michael Chiklis, in a way that's unrelentingly sort of original. He's a really original character. There are not many TV cops who look like Vic Mackey. There are not many TV cops who are as morally ambiguous as Vic Mackey, who are as awful and yet you rooting for him as Vic Mackey. The writing on that show is so good. The pacing on that show is so good. I remember being tense in every single episode. And even though he is occasionally a terrible set of lads, you just absolutely team Vic the whole way. At least I was. Maybe that says something about me. So, Luther, Mackie, Andy Sipowicz, if for no other reason than for services to short sleeve shirts with ties. If for no other reason.
Do you remind you a bit of Tosh from The Bill as well? With the most
100% Tosh Lyons was the inspiration. I went back to this show, NYPD Blue, recently. I told you that I had.
Which is what inspired us to do this tonight.
I think it is.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it so much, man. Jesus, I forgot how much I loved it when it came out. And I didn't get to stick with it through the evolution of it as such. But that early season where you're seeing Andy Sipowicz emerge as a character, a guy who has gone sort of into the bottle and needs redemption and has this really sparky relationship with Caruso's John Kelly. They obviously both have great affection for each other. Sipowicz has trained Kelly up, and Kelly's now the big dog, and Sipowicz is kind of on the skids at this stage. And to see him redeem himself and come back into his own in over the course of that opening season, and to see, I'd forgotten Amy Brenneman is in that, who people will know from Heat, if nothing else. It's just a great show. Perhaps not as gritty as I was actually expecting, but plenty gritty. And it does a very specific stylized thing with New York and the New York of the time. And it's a new New York. It's an emergent New York. It's not the shithole of the 70s and 80s where, man, that was a scary place to be. It's the emergent 90s New York where, yeah, there's still really bad areas, but it's also quite pretty in other areas. It's becoming the gentrified city that we probably all visited then in the 90s and 2000s with our little balls of money to go shopping, which became a real cultural phenomenon for Irish people. And I like it. I like seeing how the city was developing. But right at the heart of it, with his short sleeve and his tie, is Andy Sipovitz. And I can't say enough good things about Dennis Franz. He's an absolutely wonderful actor. You would just back him to do anything. And the fact that he isn't cast in every single thing all the time is beyond me. I think he's got an incredible heart, a wonderful performer. He can do so much with so little in terms of expression. Likeable, real, fantastic. I'd say the same things about Chiklis as Vic Mackey, except he's not as amiable at all, but he is as troubled and as tortured. Luther, not so much troubled and tortured as these two boys, but enough that you have your rooting for him as well. That leaves my top two, and I had to either go for one of Rust and Marty or single Rust. And I went, like you, just with Russ Cole, because the character for me made me think in a way that wasn't always in any way anything I agreed with. But it was challenging writing. It was delivered really well by McConaughey. You referred to it as the McConaissance, where he went from being this sort of bongo-beating, long-haired, pretty boy to a lad who you could actually hang a movie on, you could hang a big series like this on. There was a bit of heft to his performance. And I think he is a transformative type of character for detective show writing. And I had to finish out then. It was either going to be Bunk or Jimmy or the two of them from The Wire. Bunk Moreland or Jimmy McNulty, for me, will always be my favourite cop duo. And I'm going to put them in here as a cop duo. Wendell Pierce as Bunk is just spectacularly good. In terms of, you don't see many people with that much presence on screen. McNulty, I had a little kind of personal association because the actor whose name
Dominic West
went to TCD around the same time as me. He's about 4 years older than me, but he was there finishing when I was starting. And I just thought that was really interesting because it was a weird time. And he's clearly a very posh spoken English guy. Mm. And I did not know that until after season two. So I think credit where it's due. I've heard some people giving him shit about his accent. I think that's a bit harsh. For me, that's just Jimmy McNulty. And I think what I liked about this series was obviously the writing first and foremost. But these two guys give it its heart. And I've yet to see two lads interacting on screen and want to see them as much. I remember, I don't know what you thought, Dave, but as the series was going on, I was like, please put Bunk and Jimmy back on the screen together. That's all I want. Lester's brilliant. All these other wonderful characters, brilliant writing, incredibly engaging. But I just wanted more of the lads having the crack. And when Jimmy went straight and started settling down, I was like, oh, no, what I want is drunk Bunk and drunk Jimmy together. Yeah. That's what you want.
You referenced that the scene where the two of them go in to look at a crime scene.
Oh, it's magic.
A few weeks ago, and it is just absolute genius.
Just all variations of fuck this, fuck that. Oh, motherfucker. And it's just sighing and swearing, and what they can do with almost no vocabulary in that scene, a few looks at each other, it's just fantastic. Their chemistry is as good as anything I've ever seen on screen. Do you know what my favorite part of it, just as my finishing point here, was when Jimmy was sort of taken away from Bunk for his various misdemeanors, there's some brilliant scenes where Bunk is just pining for him. This incredible, charismatic, experienced dude who you would think would not have any such affections or deep friendships, like he's falling apart without him. You know, there's one scene where he's drunk and he just keeps going, Jimmy! And I just thought, it's absolutely fantastic. Yeah, so for me, that's my top five. Where are we going with yours?
Right, well, I'm going to start at one and work work to five, because my number one is your number one. It is Bunk and Jimmy.
Excellent.
And I just couldn't separate them. And you can't separate them because they're better together. They're brilliant individually. And when I initially looked at doing this, I had them both individually in my top 10, plus Leicester. And I was like, that's a little heavy on The Wire. Yeah. And I'm unapologetic for that, because The Wire, in my opinion, is the greatest show ever made. But I thought it made more sense to put them together because their best work is together. And like you, you're going through the show and you're waiting for the next Bunk and Jimmy scene. Everything else is great and you're watching it and you're enjoying it, but in the back of your mind, you're thinking, right, when are Bunk and Jimmy coming back on? Yeah. When are they coming back on? So they've sent Jimmy off to do this, so there's no way his next scene is with Bunk, so there's no need to be too excited, but there's going to be a scene with Jimmy and Bunk. And even the scenes with Jimmy, Bunk and Leicester are tremendous. And there's scenes with Bunk and Leicester, which are great. And the thing I find about Wendell Pierce, who I just am in awe of as an actor, is that he had incredible chemistry with everybody in that show. Like anybody he shared regular screen time with, he just had phenomenal chemistry with them. And like the scenes with Bunk and Omar are amazing as well. The scene where they're sitting and they're just having a chat because they're two lads that went to the same school. And Omar is saying, oh, I remember you. You played that sport with the weird stick thing. And like, it's just, Bunk has had this way of just meshing with absolutely everybody. So yeah, Bunk and Jimmy, for me, number one.
What you outlined there is a whole pile of wonderful actors like Michael Williams as well.
Mm.
Just brilliant actors at the top of their game doing their thing and like leaving you with these memorable things. Like, will you ever forget Jimmy rescuing drunk Bunk, who has gone off to his mistress and is wrapped up in a pink dressing gown and is trying to set the bathroom on fire for reasons, yeah. You know?
Just because he wants to.
and because he seems to be just missing Jimmy. It's mad. Yeah. It's just mad. I love it. It's brilliant. Right, that's your number
one.
The
cast in that show was unbelievable. And unfortunately, obviously, in recent years, we've lost Michael K. Williams. We've also lost Lance Riddick, who played Cedric Daniels. So, you know, treasure these people while you can, because they're part of the greatest show that's ever been committed to television. And just on Dominic West as well, it's funny, like you were saying, he was in Trinity around the time you were. He went to Eton, which, you know, slightly different background to yourself.
just a bit, man.
between, this is brilliant. He went on a gap year and he spent 4 months working as a cattle herder in Argentina.
Oh my God, he's such a trust fund poshy. It's 100%. Unbelievable.
And so now he's married to Catherine Fitzgerald, who is...
And they live in the castle, don't they?
And they live in Glyn Castle, which is her ancestral home. So, Dominic has not budged far from his upbringing, as
you can see. I was the only poor lad in Trinity in the late 90s, I'm afraid.
What was the other fellow's name? Emmett Kerwin as well would have been there maybe a little bit after you.
Oh yeah,
he was there as well. And he's obviously from a very humble working class background as well. So it was you and him fighting the good fight against all the Dublin posh boys. Number two on my list was Vic Mackey, and you went through why. I mean, just phenomenal. Michael Chiklis is unbelievable in that role, and like you said, I mean, and this is going to be a theme through a bunch of mine, because you know you could look at Rust and you could say, well, not the best set of lads, and Andy Sipowicz, a bit of a terrible set of lads himself, and Vic Mackey is at times the worst set of lads, although Shane does manage to beat him in that
regard. He does, fair play. And there you go. And now do you bring Shane into it? This is another incredible cast.
Like, yeah.
Really lads are flying here. Really incredible performances. And none more so than Shane, the character of Shane.
Walter Goggins, which is unbelievable, who
is brilliant in everything he does.
Yeah, and Kenny Johnson obviously is in that show playing Lem, And he is in a show that I watch regularly now called, he was in it for a bunch of episodes, in Chicago Fire. Number three on my list is not Chicago Fire, but is Chicago PD, Hank Voight.
Oh.
Played by a guy, Jason Begay,
okay. Who
most people will probably know him from. He was in G.I. Jane. He was in Monkey Shines, the George A. Romero film. He was in Thelma and Louise. He's been in a bunch of different things, but he landed with this. He made some appearances in Ads Imaginable and got his own spin-off, and he just becomes very much like Vic Mackey, a guy you want to root for, because behind all the dodgy deals and the rule breaking and all the rest is a good guy looking out for people that he cares about. But to get into his inner circle is very difficult. It's one of those procedural shows that I just love to watch. And the latest season is currently on now, and I'm holding myself away from watching season 11 until there's a whole bunch of it that I can binge. And as of right now, there are, I think, 13 episodes have aired. There's actually an episode aired last night, which was episode six. I think it might be a shortened season this year. So when it gets to like 10 or 12, I'll binge the whole thing.
That's a whole season or show that I have no familiarity with at all. When
there's
one
Chicago is like the universe that they're in, and the Chicago Fire, which was the original, which is just a procedural in a fire station.
I've seen some of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Chicago PD was the first spin-off of it.
Okay.
Then there's Chicago Med, which is another spin-off, which I haven't really gotten into. I've only watched a bit of. And then there was another one called Chicago Justice, which I actually really enjoyed, but they cancelled it after one season for, you know, reasons. They're all from the incredible mind of Dick Wolf,
who
is one of the most important people in the history of TV behind Law and Order, behind the Chicago franchise, behind FBI, and he's done a ton of other stuff. So, Hank Voight makes my list. And number three is John Luther, number four is John Luther, who you had on your list. Again, another guy that kind of, you know, flits the line between is he a good guy or is he an absolute bastard? And Idris Elba is phenomenal. And again, Idris Elba is another one from the Wire universe who was incredible in that show, though obviously not as a cop. But as John Luther, he is just incredible. And again, I'd watch anything Idris Elba's in. I just think he's a great actor.
The second of the guys from The Wire that I found out were English after a season or two, and you're going,
yeah,
what the fuck is happening here? It was I had no concept of either of those guys ahead of that, to be honest. Maybe they've done good stuff before that. I didn't know that. And so, yeah, that was another shocker. The thing about an awful lot of these guys as well, you mentioned that guy, Jason Begay, who plays Hank Voight, and you think about Chick Lis, and you think about Sipowitz, obviously the first two are in a slightly different category. Andy looks like he's been backed into by several buses, but but the two lads have great craggy.
Yes, yeah,
sort of like
the type of face that looks like the decisions made in life have had real consequences. Yes, on you.
Yeah. It's amazing how it'll help carry a character like that. But Gay fella, that's a fantastic face. I very much recognise him from Things.
Yeah,
but I often wondered, and this is where I'm going with this. I often wondered if Idris Elba was kind of too good looking, but he managed to carry off the craggy thing. And maybe it's just the beard and the bedraggled
look, and the looking like he's been dragged backwards through a hedge and hasn't slept in a fortnight.
Yeah.
Went out for a quiet one on a Friday night. And this is the following Wednesday and he's finally wandering home. My fifth and final one then is a character from a book that was written by David Simon, Homicide: Life on the Streets, which was then made into a TV show. And it is Frank Pembleton, played by Andre Braher, who passed away just before Christmas. Most people will know him most recently from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, where he
played
Captain Raymond Holt. Just a proper old school cop, no bullshit, proper methodology to how he went about things, and just a great performance as well. Like a big fan of the actor and big fan of the show. So yeah, he is in. So my top 10 goes Ambrose Egan, Benson and Stabler, Russ Cole, Andy Sipowicz, Lester Freeman, Frank Pemberton, Luther, Hank Voigt, Vic Mackey, and then Bunk and Jimmy is my number one.
You can't say that we haven't give people value for money there. I mean, that's some seriously solid TV shows to go watching. And I now, as a result, have two entire multi-season series that I've got no familiarity with, which I'm looking forward to seeing. This one here, The Homicide: Life in the Street, that's a totally new one to me. And the other one that had the fella Begay in it from the Chicago universe, never seen that before either. Looking forward to catching up with those, because obviously if they're keeping your attention, I know that's quite the tribute to it. I'm glad you put in Andre Brower there at that particular point. He's such an interesting dude. It's a serious career he's got behind him in terms of TV and film, but just it kind of sums it up. I presume this character is very much a serious character, whereas
yes,
the character that he plays in Brooklyn Nine-Nine is also theoretically serious, but he really does that comedy well as well. Like you say, a real loss to the general industry. I'll tell you what, man, I think we've kind of nailed it. There's a lot of good stuff there. There won't, like, I'm going to nail my colors to the mast here and say, I don't think there'll be too many people that will be sharing that as about stuff that we've missed. I think we covered off most stuff there.
Yeah, I you know, like, again, like, we haven't seen every show, so I'm sure I'm sure there'll be people that'll say, oh, well, you know, what about this guy? But, like, as you said, you haven't seen Line of Duty, so. You know, you couldn't possibly comment on any of the characters from that. I haven't seen CSI Las Vegas, so I couldn't comment on characters from that. There's going to be many other shows with many other great cops that we didn't see. And if there is, and if there's stuff that you want to recommend, then absolutely let us know. But don't shout at us, because, you know, there's just no reason for that.
Yeah,
I think it was Damo mentioned. Was it the guy? Was it Frank Farrillo from Hill Street Blues that he mentioned?
Yes. Yeah.
So honourable mention to him. But again, like, that's a show that I did rewatch years after its original run. I think it ran from like 81 to 87 or something.
Yeah,
81 to 87. I rewatched that later, but unfortunately, I was trying to keep my honourable mention list as short as possible, because in the last list show we did, I think I had like 40 for a top 10. So I was trying to cut people out. And unfortunately, he did get cut out of the last. He lost out to Chief Wiggum, is basically what I'm saying.
Hey, listen, that is no insult to anyone. And like, I could honestly do a half hour on Wiggum alone. Some of the finest lines ever delivered have been delivered by Chief Wiggum. And I can see potentially us having a good old natter about our favorite Simpsons episodes at some point, because when that was good, it was really good.
Oh, yeah.
But we have hit the almost 65-minute mark, and therefore we are on the way out the gap here. Hope you enjoyed us taking our trip down through this list. Hope it maybe supplied one or two suggestions to you. Hope it didn't make you too cross. And like Dave said, if you are cross, just keep it to yourself. I have no interest in social media interactions or angry lads or lasses. All I want to do is have the crack. That's what this show is supposed to be. A bit of fun, a bit of a talking point, something to distract you when literally everything else seems to be falling apart. So from myself, Trev Denny, from Dave Hendrick, this is Buzz. We are flying and doing two a week for you. If you like it, tell people about it for the love of God. Review it. Give it all the stars. Big us up. Get us out there. Get us into people's ears. We appreciate you. Take care. Sports Social Podcast Network.